I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. Today, we conclude our series on the new space race, SpaceX versus Blue Origin. After a bumpy start, things are looking good for Elon Musk's SpaceX. Last May, the company's Crew Dragon capsule hit a milestone in human history by managing a safe and successful round trip to the International Space Station, carrying its first set of astronauts aboard. As a result, Elon Musk's net worth shot skyward. In January, he surpassed Jeff Bezos to claim the title of richest man on Earth. But don't count Bezos out just yet. NASA recently added Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket to its list of vehicles eligible to compete for launch missions. After decades of incremental leaps forward, the space race feels like it's really ramping up. And though Musk and Bezos are the most popular contenders, they're not the only ones in the running. For more, we're talking with Tim Fernholz. He wrote Rocket Billionaires: Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and the New Space Race. And he writes about space and the economy for Quartz. He'll be talking with us about the future prospects of space travel and whether space tourism is really viable. That's all just ahead. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Tim Fernholz, welcome to Business Wars.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Our series picks up in 2003, really, when the private space sector was just an idea. And you fast forward almost two decades, the private industry all but runs the shows these days, it seems. As of now, where do things stand in the space race?
It has been a sea change in the last two decades that you've just recounted, as these new players backed by Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk have really changed the industry and proven to be the major source of innovation. Mm-hmm. The way things stand now is NASA now fully embraces working directly with private companies rather than sort of designing their own hardware and handing it off to the military-industrial complex. And we're seeing now the venture capital industry throw hundreds of millions of dollars at new space startups that are trying to follow in Jeff and Elon's wake. So we've seen a major change, a major inflection point because of these firms. But at the same time, their real promise is still to come.
What brought about the change to the status quo ante? I mean, you were talking about how NASA used to do things, right? There had to have been some sort of inflection point that made NASA willing to trust outside contractors like SpaceX.
To my view, we saw that inflection point with the Commercial Cargo Program, which was NASA's program to hire private companies to carry cargo up to the International Space Station. And while it may seem like a small thing to fly cargo up to the International Space Station, you have to remember that the ISS costs us more than $100 billion It is very delicate, and it has people on it that you have to keep alive. And so anytime NASA lets a spacecraft near the ISS, it has a lot of confidence in it. And once NASA became comfortable with private companies like SpaceX flying around the ISS, mm-hmm. it really opened up the whole range of possibilities for private firms to work with the U.S. Space Agency.
I wonder what it is that when you're looking at, you know, the parallels, what's similar about these characters? I mean, putting aside the United Launch Alliance, why Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos in a space race? Maybe that's what it comes down to.
Well, they're both very unique figures. They both attract a lot of attention and a lot of criticism. But I think if you look at what they have in common, it sort of paints a path forward to where we are today. They both grew up nerds. They were inspired by the space program and inspired by very speculative visions of what civilization's future could look like among the stars. Mm-hmm. Then as young adults, they become part of the internet industry, which was a time when the U.S. government was essentially commercializing what had been a defense technology. And they grew up in this milieu of venture capital, of software and software engineering, and the focus as businesses on growth over profitability. And they both, in that way, made fortunes in the 1990s with Amazon on one hand and PayPal on the other. And then both of them, after these initial successes, sat back as wealthy people, and both on parallel tracks came to the conclusion that the best thing they could do for society was to lower the cost of going to space by designing reusable rockets. And so for all their differences as business leaders, they have these things in common that have set them on the path towards creating these companies.
I think it's fascinating how a shorthand has emerged that there's a certain patriotism involved in reducing the cost of spaceflight, when it sounds like, as I hear your description there, that at the core of a lot of this is just, it's something akin to a kind of a fantasy ambition of wanting to be part of that grand American project that, you know, we were all a part of in some way as we watched the rockets lift off on TV in the 60s and 70s.
I do think so. I would complicate that maybe slightly by saying that both of them cast their space hopes in the future of humanity writ large. I think they are both fairly patriotic, perhaps Jeff more than Elon. Both really speak highly of the U.S. system that has allowed them to become wealthy and influential. But I think they see their space work as something bigger than just defined by national borders. I think when you look at what motivates them, they both talk about a romantic vision. You're right. Elon Musk is often quoted as saying, you know, people need a reason to be excited to get up in the morning, something to look forward to. They're obsessed with frontiers. But they honestly believe that the future of humanity writ large will be better if we can do more in space. And there are people who disagree with them about that, obviously, but I think it's really interesting that they both really believe that.
Well, how would you characterize the relationship, I suppose you could say, between these two entrepreneurs?
Well, I think they do have mutual respect for each other, and they have both praised each other's companies when they've had, you know, major space accomplishments. But I think at the end of the day, they're both very competitive people. And I think both of them also, because they see these projects as more important than just dollars and cents, they want to be sort of recognized as doing good through this. And so there is a rivalry to be seen as the person who is advancing space more and more. But I think what is interesting is their rivalry was maybe at its sharpest earlier on, when neither company was doing that much, when they were still designing or testing, fighting over, you know, different facilities they wanted to lease from the U.S. government. But as time has gone on and they've actually achieved more, and I think they've come to terms with how difficult their goals will be to achieve, I think there's become more of a grudging respect between the two. But ultimately, where we really see them competing is for government contracts. And that is, you know, no holds barred legal combat to try and win billions and billions of dollars from the government. And so when those come up to play, there is no love lost between SpaceX and Blue Origin.
I'm fascinated by the fact that if anytime you have people talking about the space race as it currently exists, you don't often hear the name Richard Branson mentioned, or at least not that much, I suppose I should say. And yet Virgin Galactic is still an ongoing concern, right?
Yes, it is. And, you know, Richard deserves a lot of credit for being a pioneer in the space sector. I think one of the reasons that maybe Branson's company, which is now publicly traded on the stock exchange, I should say, Virgin Galactic, doesn't quite get the attention is because they have set themselves a smaller goal of a rocket that can fly people, tourists, up to the edge of space for about 20 minutes and bring them back again. That is a very hard thing to do, it turns out, and they're still trying to do it, but it's not maybe as exciting as visions of a city on Mars or thousands of people living in, you know, a space station orbiting the moon, even though those are further away. You know, we could see Virgin Galactic start flying people into space regularly this year.
That's just it. Well, it's not as exciting as going to the moon, but what's more realistic? Sending people to the edge, that edge of space and Earth's own atmosphere, or building colonies on Mars? I mean, which does sound far more fantastical.
Well, just the way you phrase it, you have to say it's more realistic to send people to the edge of space. We've already seen it happen in 2004, and, right. And Virgin Galactic has launched several successful flights, not with any paying customers yet. We also think the New Shepard Blue Origin suborbital rocket will fly tourists this year. Mm. So that's coming. And we've even already seen space tourism go up to the International Space Station before now. And I think it's important to remember that more so with Jeff, less so with Elon, when these guys talk about the really fantastic futures they're imagining, you know, Elon will say, I want to retire on a city on Mars. And Jeff will say, I want my grandchildren to live in an orbital, you know, space station or something. And so, you know, they see themselves as taking first steps. And, you know, the tendency to overpromise, that attracts attention, that attracts financing. But it is important to remember that the reality is going to be, as Blue Origin puts it, gradatum ferociter, which means steadily and ferociously moving forward.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's ZOHO.ONE. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. You know, I was thinking about the last big transformation, technological transformation. I suppose it's the democratization of the internet is the one that immediately comes to mind. And when that started unfolding, of course, businesses were chasing it in a number of directions. It seemed like a Brave New World, of course, there was a lot of Wild West attached to it, and a lot of ugliness, too. I mean, ultimately, as much good that, you know, can be attributed to the digital age, you can also talk about the negative repercussions. And I wonder, Tim, if it wouldn't be fair of us to look at the possible negative implications of this new space race.
Absolutely. I think, as with any technology, the way humans put it to use can either be negative or positive. When it comes to doing a cost-benefit analysis of our spending on space as a nation or as a world, I think a lot of good benefit comes from it. And of course, from a national point of view, the U.S. military and its ability to project power around the world is dependent on space. And there's also an economics point of view where having investment in high-tech business in the U.S. supports high salaries, economic growth, and innovation. So there are plenty of arguments that the space sector is a net benefit to humanity. But as you say, we can't ignore the possible negative repercussions. And there are some. And that's why I think people need to pay attention to this, because even if you think Elon Musk's dreams of going to Mars are silly, he's doing a lot of stuff that will affect people on Earth and that we need to understand. So beyond the benefits, a couple negative things that could happen. You know, right now, lowering the cost of access to space effectively means we're launching a lot more satellites, mm-hmm. a lot more spacecraft, a lot more rockets. And that means a lot more junk, trash in orbit around the Earth. And up until pretty recently, there weren't that many launches. Most of them were government launches. And it wasn't that big a deal. But now, with private companies playing an even bigger role and just so much more volume of stuff going up there, we need better rules and best practices around disposing of space junk, cleaning it up, what people should be allowed to launch. And because it's an international jurisdiction, there aren't real clear rules and there aren't real clear enforcement mechanisms. So we need to figure out space traffic management so we don't see something like in the movie Gravity, where you have just a wild storm of space debris trashing all the stuff we have up there, not only because it would be bad for potentially astronauts or people, but also because it would render potentially low Earth orbit unusable. So no more GPS, no more, you know, tracking deforestation or climate emissions from space, and no more exploration.
It's interesting because in a way this was like radio, the start of radio itself, where you had so many signals out there and nobody really knew how to police it. And is this something that the Federal Trade Commission should be involved in, for example? I mean, in a sense,
it's a very similar problem.
Where do you put the responsibility for this sort of stuff? But I want to get back to something that you mentioned about the geopolitical consequences, because when you think just theoretically about this, we now have a private citizen with ostensibly the ability to colonize another planet and talking about doing just such a thing. Is there not a danger, both in terms of precedent, individuals basically starting their own jurisdictions, if you will, in space, but beyond that, what we could see, say, on other places, other satellites like the moon, our own moon, where there's been talk about, say, the United States having an ongoing base there as a sort of launch pad to Mars?
I am not so much worried about Elon's plans to colonize Mars, because for all of his innovation and his success, he's still dependent on the U.S. government. All of his rockets still launch from U.S. military bases. And perhaps more importantly, the U.S. government is responsible for anything Elon does under the main treaty, the U.N. Outer Space Treaty, that guides what nations can do in space. So I'm not as worried about Elon taking off to Mars and the rest of the world being upset about that. I'll worry about that in 15 years. But what we can worry about more reasonably are sort of repercussions from the cheaper cost of space access, the U.S. plan to return to the moon. One aspect of that plan is that we're hiring private companies to send robots to the moon to do reconnaissance effectively for future astronauts. But they're also going to collect samples of the lunar soil, basically bag them up and leave them there for NASA to pick up. And this is going to be something NASA is going to pay for. The reason the United States is doing this is to set a precedent that a country can make an economic transaction in outer space. technically, the U.S. will argue this is within the realm of the U.N. Outer Space Treaty, which says that you can't claim property on an astronomical body like the moon. Mm-hmm. But the U.S. is saying, well, if you take something like lunar soil, you can say that's your property. And there was actually a law passed in 2015 that applied this to asteroids as well. Now, this is all still pretty speculative because companies are still getting the ability to do this. Mm-hmm. But the U.S. has launched an international negotiation called the Artemis Accords, where it is trying to rally countries to agree to standards of behavior in space for space debris, to avoid interfering with exploration on the moon. But some other countries are skeptical of this and see it as a U.S. power grab, not least of which are China and Russia. China especially is the U.S.'s biggest rival in terms of actually being able to do stuff in space. And so the fear that some theorists have is that this could be perceived as kind of a land grab in space.
Right. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
You could have countries saying, oh, gosh, we have to get up there to get our chunk of the most important territory on the moon or the best asteroid, or maybe to put a satellite at the Lagrange point between the Earth and the moon and say, this is ours. That would be a pretty worst case scenario. You could imagine it being like the sort of colonial land grab in Africa that preceded World War I. It would be really bad and destabilizing. And so the hope is that the nations of the world and the United Nations will actually find an amicable process to find a consensus on what to do in space.
You know, I was thinking early on in the internet age, we were talking about players that they're not necessarily household names here in 2021 anymore. I mean, the founders of Netscape and Yahoo and America Online, if anyone remembers that. These were the Jeff Bezos and Elon Musks of their time, at least in the popular imagination. Now here we are talking about Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. How unlikely is it that Jack Ma or someone like him won't be doing precisely the same thing in the next within the next 4, 5, 6 years?
It's already happening. When SpaceX launched their Falcon Heavy rocket a few years ago, which is the biggest one they currently have, it was a big moment because it was the first time a private company and not a nation had developed a heavy lift rocket itself. And one of China's state newspapers wrote a story where they were like, you know, China is not just competing with the U.S., we're competing with SpaceX. And we've seen the Chinese government basically give the go-ahead to a bunch of entrepreneurs to start rocket companies. Now there's 4 or 5 in China. They have been doing launches. They've been raising money from private investors. And a lot of them are very explicit in saying, you know, we want to be Chinese SpaceX. We want to do what Elon did. It's interesting thus far that a lot of the bigger Chinese tech companies, the equivalents of your Facebooks or Amazons or Googles, mm-hmm. have not yet gotten into space activity. I think part of that is the Chinese government has a little more control over this sector mm-hmm. Than we do in the U.S., where it's a little more of a free-for-all. But a big prediction that analysts are making is we are going to see the Tencents and Huawei's of the world start to look harder at space investment.
Ultimately, who is, at this juncture, who is the winner in the space race of the 21st century?
I would have to say that right now the leader is Elon and SpaceX. They are still doing the most innovative work, and they are doing it across the most different areas in the space business. So they're launching satellites, they're building satellites, they're launching people, they're working for the government, they're working for private companies. The whole spectrum. Jeff is still catching up with Blue Origin. He still doesn't have an orbital rocket. He's still not building satellites. He has a suborbital rocket that's fully reusable, which is really cool. But he's still not quite competing directly against SpaceX. That may change in 2021, which is when Jeff hopes to debut the new Glenn, his very big reusable rocket at Blue Origin. Mm-hmm. And we're also hoping to see Amazon start to launch their Kuiper internet satellite constellation. That's going to be a major part of the space business in the years ahead.
You can read more about this subject in Tim Fernholz's book, Rocket Billionaires, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and the New Space Race. And of course, anytime over at Quartz, where Tim writes about space and the economy. Tim, thanks so much for taking time to speak with us on Business Wars. It's been a real pleasure to get to say hello and and to hear your perspectives and insights.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
The next series of Business Wars is just around the corner, and it involves an industry today valued at some $50 billion, a field where the disruptors are many and the giants are but a relative handful who maintain tight-fisted control over their valuable markets. Though few think of the cosmetics industry as a rough and tumble place, its origins are epic, and we're about to explore two of the modern-day giants who helped make it what it is today, L'Oreal and Estée Lauder. The focus of the next series of Business Wars. You're going to love it. From Wondery, this is Episode 7 of SpaceX versus Blue Origin for Business Wars. I'm your host, David Brown. Lori Galloretta produced this episode. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.